Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther. Welcome
hey, buddy.
Back, buddy.
Yeah. Hola.
Hola.
I'm back from Mexico.
Yeah, man. How was it?
It was great. I went down twice in a week. I've never been to Mexico, and then I went two times in a week.
What the hell were you doing down there, man?
I went down with the Duristi family and saw their products. They make a coconut liqueur called Kalani.
Oh.
They make one that's Guanabana. Yeah. These guys probably use it. And then they make a really cool one called Esteban. It's
Esteban?
Yeah, it's the Mayan spelling. It starts with an X. But it's fennel and honey liqueur. Delicious.
Cool, man.
Then I flew back home for 2 days and worked. And then I flew back down to Mexico. I went to Jalisco and Guadalajara with Aviñón Tequila.
Damn,
holy,
dude.
Holy cow, those guys are hospitable.
Yeah, and you brought me a cigar. Thanks for
I brought
that.
You a Romeo and Julieta Cuban cigar.
Julieta.
Well, you know. I'm going back down in Hoon or Hulai, I guess.
But you did say hola instead of hola, so I'm proud of, half proud of you.
That's all I'm ever looking for is half your pride.
All right, so let's get into it, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, welcome back.
I'm Thank you.
Had a good trip. Two trips, rather.
I did. I wish you could have went with me.
Next time. Next Indeed. Time we'll do. So, yeah, man, today in the studio, we have some buddies in here from Happiest Hour and Slowly Surely in the West Village of New York City. Two great bars.
Inside one. Two great tastes that taste great together.
Two great tastes. Yeah, exactly, man. So, in the studio, from right to left, we have Garrett Richard.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back. We have Ray.
Sackover.
Sackover.
Sackover. Good one.
And we have Jim Kearns. Welcome back.
Jim's been on before, and I know Garrett's been on before because he was here with the Tiki Mafia Arg just a few weeks ago. And yeah, man, great to have you guys back in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, welcome.
Of course.
So today we're going to talk about Exotica.
Exotica.
We're going to talk about
mid-century music. Exotica. Are these guys a band? There's a keyboard in here.
There's a band. There's also lots of drinks.
Yeah.
There's also lots of burlesque going on. But
before we get into that, let's talk about what do you guys do over there, man? I mean, because, like, it is... I know that, actually, I've worked with Garrett and Jim at Prime Meats back in the day. And there was, you know, a lot of silencers and things like that.
Hard starts.
Yeah. Give us a rundown of what's going on these days over there.
Well, Happiest Hour is kind of a mid 20th century resort themed bar, a la like L.A. or Miami kind of feel. Downstairs at Slowly Surely is sort of a golden age of Hollywood hotel bar.
Yeah, it's really cool to have. Like, I know that like your staff, a good majority of them work in both bars, and like the upstairs, the Happy Hour.
Try to keep it that way.
Yeah, yep. Upstairs is more of like the like tiki shirt, like ground level, like natural light coming in. Like you've got like a lot of like your wallpaper is very like palm treed out.
A little more fast and loose.
Yeah. High volume balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Totally. Party bar.
Yeah, and I like that bar too. It's kind of a horseshoe, sort of sideways horseshoe. You can see across the bar to see the patrons on the other side of the bar. So it feels very communal to be in there.
I bet yeah, there's a lot of people who've hooked up there.
Just I hear tell.
By virtue of it being like a horseshoe bar, like where you can see everyone at the bar, and it's like when you know, like the old idea of that is that if you can see people from across the bar, then usually
you can connect with them.
Connect yeah. with them.
I'm sure a lot of babies have been conceived from Happiest Hour.
So, well, one thing that comes to mind, something we don't really get to talk about a whole lot on this show, but I think it's something of note, is that, you know, when you go to, when you think of cocktail bars in New York City or anywhere really, you don't often think about the food, but the fucking burger.
Oh man.
Oh my God. It's so good.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the people that out there that know me know that I eat 4 hamburgers a year. That's it. Just
only
4.
A
only
year?
4. Yeah. I know you probably have 4 a week, right?
I used to.
I eat 4 a year. There's a whole... Go to my Facebook. We'll talk about why. But anyway. But I had my hamburger this year so far. I had one in January. I had the Happiest Hour burger. Classic nice. Burger. What, awesome. what do you call it?
The Happiest Burger.
The Happiest Burger.
Yeah. yeah.
That's and it's kind of like a... You know, so every time I'm going to have a burger, I post it out on my Facebook to say, all right, I feel like it's a burger day. Let me get some suggestions. And I don't do repeats, right? So I've never gone to anywhere and had a second burger.
Wow.
But... on my Facebook, I got like, I don't know, 120 responses, and I just counted up who got the most votes, and Happiest Hour got the most votes.
That's democratic. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. And then Aaron Polsky chimed in and said that it was to him, and this may be totally untrue to your effect, but it seemed that way when I ate it. It seems like a kind of like deconstructed, reconstructed Big Mac. It's like a nice version of a Big Mac.
It's got elements of a Big Mac, a little In-N-Out, and a little Shake Shack kind of thrown in there.
Yeah,
all burgers I've had, so there we go.
Polsky has gotten some treatment that I don't think anyone else has gotten. He was able to take a Tahitian coffee from Slowly Surely upstairs. I think he's the only person that's gotten away with that. You know, walking around with a Chemex full of alcohol, just trying to talk to people.
They were just like, who the fuck is this guy, and why is he walking around with a giant pot of coffee?
Yeah.
Coffee booze. That guy's got swagger.
Yes. Please tell me that guy usually dresses in just head to
gold lame.
White or gold lame.
I think it was a gold lame Speedo at the time.
Perfect.
So outside of that, I mean, like, you guys... You figured out a way to kind of incorporate your very, like, because I know that, like, Garrett's very much into, I mean, to say that he's into tiki cocktails is, it's not giving enough justice.
It's a significant understatement.
Right. So, but Jim, I know that you and I are very much into, like, the classic, like, stirred boozy vibe, right. You know. So you guys have managed to create a vibe that, like, bridges those.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, tiki's a fun kind of thing to play with for me, but it's never been, you know, I've never been someone who sort of specialized in one area or who wanted to open a bar that just did one kind of thing. So, you know, given the kind of feel and the framework that, you know, we have with both bars, really, if you think about it, tiki would have been a major element in the drinking culture of, you know, both eras that both bars kind of hearken to. So it wasn't at all a reach to say, okay, well, we should have some tiki cocktails on both floors. And upstairs, you know, we at Happiest Hour, we kind of go with slightly more simple, kind of accessible things like a, you know, pina colada or a painkiller in the slushy machine. Whereas downstairs, we can really kind of roll up our sleeves and play with some stuff that's a little more complicated and sure. nuanced. And Garrett's great with coming up with, stuff to.
I mean, in the era that we're sort of, you know, that we're evoking downstairs, the bars that brought mixology back were Trader Vic's, Steve Crane's Luau. Those were where the best bartenders were in the United States at the time. So it was something that the program wanted to evoke, certainly. And I think when we first opened, you know, we had a little bit of that. And then I feel like we should talk about, like, in the last year, we sort of made a big transition with where the menu was. where we started evoking more, you know, sours from that era and classics, tiki classics, and then also doing an entire savory section because our opening menu sort of looked at the neighborhood and wanted to adapt to what people wanted, which was like more savory cocktails.
Quickly, how old is Happiest Hour at this point? And slowly, surely.
We're about 2.5 years old. We opened Happiest Hour in October of 2014. We opened Slowly, Surely in May of 2015.
So. I remember that because we had just opened Grand Army, and I was like,
it was really
just
close.
Balls deep in that opening. And you invited me to the opening night of Slowly, Surely, and I got on the train, and I went there. And I got about 3/4 of the way through a cocktail.
Yeah, you're having Cleopatra, some text. I remember.
Got some text, and I was like, all right, got to go.
Yep. I recognized the look on your face. I knew it would be. I was like, well, Damon's about to leave.
Cameo achieved.
Yeah. But it was great, and thanks again for that invite. And it was also cool to be there. I always love seeing a bar like when it's under construction, and I got to see that bar. I didn't get to see Happiest Hour when it was under construction, but I got to see Slowly Surely when it was still under works. And don't you like that? Like seeing like the skeleton?
Yeah, of course. It's like you really get a full picture of like where it came from and where it ended up and what the vision was of the makers, the builders, et cetera. Yeah.
See the flesh kind of get put on the bones.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And since then, like, well, you were saying that, you know, like that first, the first menu started out a certain way, but now you've started moving into a... kind of a lot more like savory cocktails because of what the neighborhood was.
Yeah, I think with Slowly Surely, you know, we opened with, you know, a slightly different kind of menu. We, you know, started off with more stirred, boozy drinks. Our classics
room
list.
Temperature cocktails.
Yeah, our classics sure. list Very was Manhattan's stuff. Martinis and old fashions and variations on those drinks. And you know, and we had like the room temperature cocktails was a fun thing to try on a menu.
My favorite. But, I always have one on the menu or more.
Great. It just, they weren't the most accessible. And, for the second menu, we really tried to incorporate some more accessible, you know, kind of fun elements. And
it started out as a joke. We were like, what's the first page going to be? And I was like, well, people are always asking for spicy drinks. They always ask, can I have the spicy one? So the joke was, well, I have 9 of them. Here's the spicy one.
It's a page of spicy ones.
It was very important for John Nydick, my partner, and I to have a representation of classic cocktails on the menu. And so we had the idea to have a rotating list of classics as, you know, as we kind of went on. And so the second rollout of classics was a sours section and a daisies section. And obviously through sours and daisies, we were able to say, all right, well, tiki fits into this continuum. Let's, you know, play around with some, you know, some drinks that go, you know, into that
thing. Was anybody present pushing for that?
Well, it was a good time.
I think we all kind of were.
It was a good time for it because I think it took a while to get the right syrups people, the right, you know, back of house stuff.
For
and
sure.
Like when we started writing that menu, like the syrups were at optimal level so that we could, because when you're first opening, it's just like, let's get the systems in place to make just ginger syrup correctly.
Yeah. And, is the prep guy going to show up?
Yeah, is the prep guy going to show up? And like,
is he going to be sober?
Finally, we were at that level where we could go, okay, we can work on our version of the Jack Rose or our version of the Navy Grog or whatever, because we had all those things in place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have 2 Orgeats. You know, we have a lot of stuff to play around with. It's really nice.
Cool.
You painted me a picture. I think, Damon, you painted me a picture. Us, the listener. I've been to Happy Sour. I've never been downstairs. What does it look like down there?
Oh man, I can tell you. Do you want me to tell you?
Go for it, man. Yeah, I'd like to hear.
Third person perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that you notice when you go down the stairs, it's a sliding door, not a push pull door. So
already creating some tension.
If you've already had a couple pina coladas upstairs, and then you go down the stairs, you might not
feel locked
figure out.
Out
how to get. Yeah, you're locked out. But the thing is, it is kind of cool that way because it is a. It is like it's transportive, sure. You know. So like when you go down there, it kind of has it's very kind of like deco, like mid-century, like post-deco, bar vibe with a slight curve at the front, and the bartenders are wearing burgundy tuxedo jackets.
Oh yeah,
shining.
I love the shining. Yeah, I was about
shining,
to say, yeah. Lloyd.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all trying to be Lloyd.
It's got a little Lloyd to it.
Your
for
money's
sure.
No good here, Mr. Torrance.
And there's these great like banquet booth vibes going on, but the bar is cool itself because it's like at the end of the room. It's not like it doesn't take up the width of the room. It's like it's the kind of end, like where you're sitting.
Kind of like the Le Boudoir bar is.
Exactly.
Okay, I dig it.
Like that. So
positioning.
It creates a long room that, you know, like, I've noticed that, like, I mean, I'm always the person who wants to sit at the bar.
Of course.
But what I notice a lot of times when I go to Slowly Surely is that there are a lot of people who are just like, they want to be in this cocktail den and hang out at the table and have, like, table service and chill the fuck out. But if you want to go to the bar, it's like you're there. They've got like bistro height tables. Yeah. So it is inclusive in a way to where you still feel like you're kind of like sitting at the bar, even if you're behind the bar stools and you're sitting at one of those tables or standing around one of them.
Roger.
And then the cocktails are like we were saying before, like there's the Tahitian coffee that's served in a Chemex, which is a fucking great idea. Just even by virtue of what we're about to talk about later today.
Yeah, that got some press. I remember seeing that in the press.
Yeah, like the Exotica, like mid-century style. Even though the Chemex was invented in, what, the 30s?
Or? Yeah, it was, I think, late 30s, yeah.
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 It looks very mid-century, though.
It actually, what you're talking about with the long room and people wanting to sit at tables, we take parties of, like, 15 a lot.
Yeah, we can take up to about 15 comfortably.
I'm glad we had the large format drinks before that started happening, yeah. But it would have eventually, we would have had to start figuring out, okay, like, when, you know, a group of 12 rolls in, what are we going to do? And now we have another great large format drink, Jim's Perla Negra, that's on the menu. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, but
yeah, I'd love to hear about it.
Sure.
It's calamansi, orange, lime, ginger, honey, Batavia Arrack, and rum, topped off with actually Garrett Sorrel, which you can talk about that if you want. It's essentially a hibiscus rum infusion, sort of.
It's an agua de Jamaica, yeah, but with alcohol instead of water.
And it's served alcohol in a served in a large skull shaped kind of punch bowl that also that Garrett found somewhere online that we were kind of toying around with the idea to
make. Burying the lead, though. What's the color? What is the color of the drink?
Can I just talk about something besides the color? No, and it's got activated charcoal in it as well. So essentially, you have like this drink that's served in a skull, and it's a black drink, and then it's topped off with red from the sorrel, and then there's candle stuff on top of
metal
it.
Cocktail.
Yeah, it's definitely it's like metal tiki or tiki metal. I don't know which way you go.
Sounds
the use.
I want one of those today.
The original name was going to be Black
right
Mass.
Right after the show.
Perla Negra.
Much to the chagrin of Avery Glasser, it uses charcoal. Sorry, Avery.
He'll be fine.
Cool, man. Some of the other elements of that place that I've noticed, like, and I think we have come to a really cool place in modern cocktail history, is that, one, you have a banana drink. You had one from the beginning.
I know, yeah, it's still on the menu.
We've always had it.
Yeah. And two, which I think is really kind of funny, like, when I don't drink coffee anymore, but I love that you guys have cold brew just hanging around. Because, like, I don't do too many shots, but, like, anytime like I do a shot with Jim,
it's a shot of cold brew.
We probably consume more than we serve.
But yeah, like I'm still stuck on.
We're a very alert staff.
I'm still stuck on. I don't do too many shots. Yeah. I feel like it's a touching story, but possibly a lie.
I sip quickly.
It's a subtle difference.
But the other thing is like one that was just posted today. On Instagram, you've got a new blue drink.
Yes.
Oh no.
Can we talk about like the the resurgence of blue drinks just for a second. I mean, like, it's pretty amazing. Like, I mean, like, I love talking about blue drinks. I mean, sorry, Souther.
That's fine.
I know you're colorblind.
Whatever. Who kicked it off here in New York?
That's a good question.
Was it Nick Bennett with the Gunmetal Blue or whatever?
He definitely got a lot of press for it.
That was over a year ago, right? That was almost 2 years ago.
I mean, there was
it was
a
on good, the opening menu at Porchlight.
There was a good frozen at Lonnie Kai, the 808 State. That was a like frozen blue agricole drink. That was a really good drink at the time.
I mean, I just think it's really interesting that blue Curacao is no longer that thing that people are like
afraid of.
Fuck that shit. Actually,
it's a hard dance to do.
It's a hard dance to balance it and not make it taste blue, but at the same time, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times it'll just taste blue.
Right.
I mean, or you could do a blind like tasting of like, you know, like senior Curacao to Curacao, you know, like they make five different colors. They make like a orange, a white, a brown, a red, and a green and a blue. They actually make a lot of different colors. But like, if you do a blind tasting, they're not going to taste.
No, they just all taste the same. Yeah,
they taste the same. But once you see it, you're like, damn, that tastes blue.
The dance though is like it's color, it's taste. It's got to make sense in the cocktail. And then, like, you could lose the color if you start to adjust one way or the other. Yeah. I mean, if we did the Cleopatra the way we did it and ended up brown, we probably wouldn't have been on the menu. Yeah.
Right, right.
It's so subtle that, like, one little change would just,
it is
like,
tough, especially in the context of tiki, because so many tiki drinks end up being kind of a beige color, and that's why tiki mugs are so common.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you add too many juices.
That's fascinating. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Well, you're colorblind, dude. But
still, I should have known that about the mug.
Well, you were saying before the show, you're like, dude, guacamole, like, you get your greens, your reds, your purples, like, all this stuff. It's like,
still tastes good when it's brown.
Yeah.
Because that's how it is to me.
Yeah.
Lucky you guys that it's pretty. Okay, but let's, we haven't talked about the drink. What's the drink that's blue? Lay it on me. Whose drink is it?
So this is my riff on the Blue Hawaii, which is going to be on our Exotica Night menu, which we'll start to unpack that topic in a second. But Pacific Ocean Blue is, for a while, I was doing very straight version of Blue Hawaii. I actually have a lot of respect for that cocktail. I think it teaches you not only about presentation, it teaches you how to balance spirits very well. Like the original recipe for it said you have to use vodka with white rum and curacao, otherwise it's too wet, it's too sweet. And I think it actually teaches bartenders an important lesson, which is something we've applied to a lot of cocktails down at Slowly Surely, where vodka is with other spirits to sort of like neutral it out, dry it out, and to use it just as a, like you would in a sauce, to just amplify the flavors that are within.
Totally.
So the base of this drink is rum, Owlsbury Duck vodka, the rum is Plantation 3-Star Galliano, which is a move I took from the Tiki Tea. Every Blue Hawaii there gets the fattest, liberalest float of Galliano you can imagine. It really helps the drink. It ups the vanilla, gives you a bunch of herbaceous notes. And then on top of that, there's the traditional lemon and pineapple. There's our version of lime cordial, which gives you the bitterness. It gives an extra citrus element and sweetness all at the same time. And then a very small amount of coconut, which some Blue Hawaii recipes have. It's kind of the way we approach classics in general down there, which is we take a lot of elements from different tiki drinks, different tiki covers of the same drink over the years. So, like, our Dr. Funk has, like, five different versions in one. Our Navy Grog is the same way.
Yeah, drinks in general, when we put them on the classics list, we kind of figure out, like, okay, this person did it this way or it evolved this way over time. How much sense does it make to incorporate various elements of different people's iterations or takes on those drinks and kind of come up with one that's representative of the drink, but still uniquely our own.
Right. At least you guys are approaching it from a thoughtful angle. You're not just whipping shit together and calling it tiki. You guys are doing the research and putting in the effort.
I wouldn't think that these dudes would ever do that.
I'm just making sure the listener is aware.
That's the benefit of our time, though, is, you know, with the internet, with all the sort of areas of research and great books from Bishwan Berry and Martin Cade and everybody, is that you can start to grab all these, you know, disparate elements and put them together. I mean, that's the advantage of the time we're living in.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, let's take a quick break and have some cheese and maybe some milk.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And then when we come back, we're going to talk about this thing we keep alluding to, Exotica.
All right.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company. The operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com. And as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. We're in the studio right now with the team from Slowly Surely, and they're going to talk to us now about Exotica. This is going to be a new thing you're doing once a month?
Yes. Yeah. Every second Tuesday of the month, we're gonna do this little series. The idea came about.
Delicious.
We have a lot of regulars that are tiki enthusiasts come once a week. Joe Nicole Desmond, Martin Duderoff, and about a year ago, I started just as an exercise with some of the other bartenders. Ray can definitely account for this. Is just
yes,
starting to, you know, our syrups were like at an optimal level now. And we were like, you know, let's start specking out some of the weirder classics like Colonel Beach's Plantation Punch, the Saturn, which is a great gin cocktail from the 60s. And just doing that as an exercise. And then in having doing that process, you know, I always had something new to give these people. When they would come back, I'd be like, oh, we just figured out the Davy Jones Lager from Beachman Berry, or we just figured out the Special Planner's Punch from the Maikai. This is our version of it. And over time, this is all built up and kind of created a phantom menu. And I'm one of the few people that works with who they're dating. And my girlfriend Kayla would taste a few of these and then sell them on the floor to people that don't even have any idea about it. So what happened is we ended up having this very large phantom menu of exotic classics. And we wanted to sort of bring it out from the darkness and into the light. And that was sort of the first idea for this night. And then the second was somebody I casually know and I'm a fan of his music, Alika Lyman. He moved from Hawaii to New York and contacted me and wanted a place to play his music. His father is one of the founders of Exotica, Arthur. You know, his famous album is Taboo, and he played in all of the old Don the Beachcomber spots in Hawaii. So he continues his father's legacy, and I wanted to do a night that evokes the era that we, you know, our bar lives in, and that we can, you know, have the ultimate mid-century drinking experience. Tiki drinks, live burlesque, and live Exotica music.
He's going to be playing live, not DJing.
Yeah, he's going to be playing live with his jazz trio.
Amazing.
So cool, man. My first foray into Exotica was, there was this author, actually, Matt Moranian, wrote a couple books, Pad. There's like Pad, which was like more of a like mid-century modernist design, like home decor kind of vibe. But then he put out a second book called Pad Parties. And in that book, he had like all these different like Exotica, like mid-century tiki-ish drinks. But Exotica and the mid-century, like tiki goes into it, but it's like kind of more of like Exotica is like the lifestyle, like the post-tiki era.
Well, yeah.
Like you're like hanging out on like, in an Eames chair,
yeah,
like wearing a suit,
red jacket.
One of the things I like so much about this idea is that it kind of puts these drinks back into a context. You know, it takes it essentially takes them out of like just being something on a menu or that something you read on in a recipe or read about in a book, and puts them into you know, a real place where you're surrounded by elements from that time and in a place that sort of evokes that time. And it puts them into a larger kind of conversation, if you will.
Sure, man. And it's all about vibes.
It's all about vibes. Hopefully vibraphones.
Vibraphones, exactly.
There better be vibraphones. Yeah.
I set you up for that.
Yeah, no, it's slam dunk on that one.
If you hadn't gone there, man.
David with the assist.
Nerds. Though it sounds awesome. And I'm super stoked to hear that it's going to be on Tuesdays because I don't work on Tuesdays.
Yeah, me neither. So we're going to be there. So
you guys better be there.
First one. Let's go next
week. First one is this next
March 14th.
March 14th. Tuesday, March 14th.
Coming Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it's going to be... Every, what did you say that is? The second Tuesday of the month?
Yes.
And it's going to be this.
Just right after inventories.
Are you going
to give us a week to recover?
Is it going
to
be like a full go? Are you going to eliminate the normal menu for this night every week or every month? Sorry.
I think it's just going to be the drinks that are developed for it. Regular menu, it will probably still be on the table. We're going to be open for an entire regular service. So
commit to the bit, man.
We want you to have those drinks.
Yeah, exactly. I think you know, if anyone wants drinks off the regular menu, it'll be kind of after the band's over and we're just sort of open, you know, post band.
What time does it start? What are the hours?
Yeah.
6 o'clock is when we open. The band starts at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Cool.
Red.
So we can get
you can
really,
get yourself a burger
really
upstairs.
Get really weird. Like,
pad your, you know, line your stomach a little. We go downstairs.
It's a lot of getting weird time.
Drink some blue stuff and some murky stuff in mugs and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, no, I think actually something I want to say about that is, like, I know that that these guys don't really do tiki mugs. You guys don't. I mean, like, I know
there's
that,
a few, but
I know that
there won't be. They won't be on this menu.
No,
this time.
Yeah. Around. So, yeah. Like, that's going to say. You know, going back to the thing we were saying before about what Jim was saying about, like, a lot of them are kind of like a weird brownish to orangish murky color, and they go into. Sorry, I know you're colorblind.
Shut up, man. Stop calling me out.
Sorry, I have to, man. You're gone for 2 weeks. Yeah, it will seem like forever to me.
My heart beats for the red, man. White, and green, or whatever.
But, you know, like, I know that, especially working with Jim for a long time, and then Garrett also for a long time, these guys don't like to make drinks that aren't pretty, you know? They like to put some stuff in some glass. So you can.
I mean, that's the thing about tiki drinks that I you know, that's the whimsical nature of it, right? Because we did talk before the thing about that whole guacamole bit.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that, you know, students, when I was an instructor at the New England Culinary Institute, would come to me with plates and they would say, and I put some diced red bell peppers for color. And I'd say, if it's not there for flavor, get it the fuck off the plate. I don't want it. Right. But this is the difference, I think, between cuisine and cocktail. Cocktail gets to be whimsical. It gets to have flourishes that don't really have a necessity to be there. You get to have a crazy mug or, you know, pineapple frond sticking out of there, fire on top.
Yeah, but it still tie into the drink.
Of course.
I mean, ideally, if it's well realized, you should have elements of the drink that kind of that point toward how it's served and how it's garnished.
I totally agree with that, but I still feel like there's definitely a greater sense of poetic license in the nature of the flourish that is a tiki-style cocktail that adds to the whimsy of making the thing and the sort of delight of having it presented to you and then enjoying it.
Yeah,
it goes back to the saying, you know, a lot of people taste with their eyes. You see a cocktail go across the room, and you're like, ooh, what's that? You know, I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You guys had that Chemex thing, and I mentioned I saw it in the press somewhere a little while ago. Like, that was a big deal, right? People were excited to see that thing. You know, Mother Pearl won best Instagrammable whatever with the shark eye.
We lost to that. I saw that.
Oh, is that where I saw this thing?
We were in the same category.
Okay, that's where I saw this thing. Yeah. Right? And that's crazy.
That's cool. But, on the flip side, well, you know, from there's three business owners here. We probably would agree on this that, you know, it would behoove you to make a really beautiful drink in, like, a glass that cost you X amount rather than rely on the tiki mug that cost you 4X amount.
Yeah.
And gets stolen all the time.
Right.
Yep.
And or when it gets broken, you're like, fuck.
No, not another one.
Another one. Bitch. So I think, like, especially with tiki drinks, I always, like, because I have tiki mugs at Crane Army. Actually, a couple of them, my buddy Garrett here has brought back.
Oh, yeah, from various travels.
Yeah. Thank you again for those. And I make drinks for, like, my friends, like, VIPs, you know, in those. But I don't. That's obviously they're not in service. So, like, it comes to a point where you're like, all right, this is a beautiful glass, a glass, you know, that the cocktail in it looks amazing and the garnish is amazing, but you know, if my bar back breaks that thing,
you're done. Yeah.
Like, it's all right. I can order that again.
I still get pretty bummed out when someone breaks a Chemex.
That's a sad day.
Well, the Chemex is
surprisingly rarely happens.
That's a good
thing. Yeah.
But I think not using the mugs, it forces you to think about, like, okay, how, like, because mugs are, it's instantly beautiful. Yeah. And
sure.
I think, like, when we were working on, you know, some of the presentations downstairs, like, it's just, you know, Ray's Casablanca, it was, all right, it's just it's in a tall glass. Like, how are you going to garnish it? How are you going to make it look good? You know, mm-hmm. And, like, you really have to go through that process.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think that's kind of, like, a way that we're moving into now. I mean, like, of course, with the Shark Eye from Mother of Pearl, it's got that mug that, like, a ceramic mug. It's a shark
face.
And that's so cool.
It's a shark face coming up out of the bar.
Yeah. And like, it's got Peugeot Bitters dashed all over, so it looks like blood, and it's, like, fucking cool. But I think that's kind of, like, the difference between tiki and exotica.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I would agree.
The presentation of a ceramic tiki god mug, and then, like, something that's in a really, like, sexy glass, you know? Would you agree?
Yeah, and on that note, like, we're also doing some things, and we're going to continue this, like, doing some stuff from the mid-century era that are traditional drinks, like Manhattan Old Fashioned, mm-hmm. that are then thrown back and made tiki. One of them we're running is called Mr. Hoy's Manhattan.
Now you're ringing my bell.
Yeah, it's a tribute to the Algonquin and the Brooklyn, but made tiki. So the rye is infused with pineapple. And then it's, besides that, it looks like a very, like a Brooklyn. It's got dry vermouth, it's got Amaro Lucano and some maraschino. And then the garnish is like a very nice, well-trimmed, you know, straight line of pineapple with like a cherry, very Manhattan-like, but tropical. And I think that's something that we want to explore throughout this series, is doing drinks like that, at least one or two.
Sounds exciting. You know, Damon mentioned a couple of books that he knows of that are, like, design-focused, because he's got that sort of mind. Where do you guys go digging when you need some information? Name a couple of resources that we could explore.
I know Jim uses Martin Dudaroff a lot, which luckily comes into the bar quite
well,
a bit.
You know, he's a regular.
No, and
it's
for
kind of going back to some of the classics that, you know, we all know, I've found that it's helpful to dig online a little bit and kind of find the recipe. Like, there are some things where I'm just like, okay, I don't know where that was originally published, so I look for it. And then I figure out, oh, that was actually made with yellow chartreuse instead of green chartreuse, which is what I always thought it was made with. So it's actually, you know, looking on Martin's site on Cocktail DB or on Simon Difford's site, they're very valuable resources for kind of fact checking yourself when you're creating menus of classics. And so yeah, those are definitely invaluable sources for us when we come up with these drinks.
I'm a big fan of some of the higher-minded 1970s cocktail guides, like Stan Jones and the Playboy.
Stan Jones is
Playboy bar guide, because they were writing it as that stuff was sort of about to go into the sunset and die for a little bit. So it's almost firsthand, if not, it's like secondhand kind of sort. I mean, Stan Jones had a lot of tiki cocktails in there, just amongst the other various, you know, Galliano Fernet atrocities that are also in there. I mean, I love those
but
too.
But it's just a tome. I mean, that's the thing about the Jones Bar book, if you can find it, because it's rare as hen's teeth, you know. It's one of those, it's like the Savoy cocktail book. It's just recipe after recipe. That's all it is.
Yeah, no context.
That's right.
The Playboy has a little bit more. There's some photos. You know, there's a, yeah, but for me, it's definitely trying to, like, look at multiple sources for things. And the Trader Vic bar guides from, like, 72 and 47 are really good for that, because you can then take something that's in a Beach Bunbury book and be like, all right, does this actually have the same ingredients? And, like, a good example, very famous whiskey tiki cocktail, Starboard Light, Port Light, depending if you use scotch or bourbon.
Yeah.
It's actually totally different in the Trader Vic guide, because the recipe that's published in Jeff's book is from the Kahiki in Ohio. And a lot of people confuse those two, and there's small little changes. One has honey, one has grenadine, totally different drinks. So I would just recommend to everybody, look up the authors you love, look up where they found that information from, because sometimes information can surprise you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, looks like we're at the end of the road here.
Yeah, we're about to get...
Let's go get some tiki on.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the important thing to take away from today's show, Exotica is going to be a new monthly event at Slowly Surely downstairs of Happiest Hour. What's the address over there?
121 West 10th Street, Manhattan.
121 West 10th Street. So starting on the 14th, that's going to be every second Tuesday of the month, Exotica, starring these three fellows making you some classic and not-so-classic tiki drinks with Exotica music being played by, say his name again?
Alika Lyman.
Alika Lyman.
Yes.
That's going to be great. And then I just have one last thing to say about this week's show. It was great, obviously. Next week we got Joe Riggs on. He's a descendant of a infamous bootlegger down south. So he's going to tell us some stories. He's also now the rep for Redemption Rye.
Has been for a while. He's a good dude.
Well, he's been a rep for a while. He just moved to New York recently, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Been in New York for about maybe 6 months. He's been down Louisville all this time. He's got some great stories to tell us and probably going to bring us some whiskey to drink on the air.
Yeah, he better.
So tune into that show next week after you've shaken off your hangover from going to Exotica Night at Slowly Surely on Tuesday the 14th.
Yeah, man.
You got anything else?
Yeah, I just want to say that there was a... I know that a lot of you guys were down at the South Beach.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
South Beach Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah. And
Garrett went down with the Tiki Mafiard.
Yeah, I was shaking cocktails from Barbon Court, and it was nice as a private citizen not competing. It was nice to see New York take the gold. Mother of Pearl won.
Yeah.
Bring the trophy back.
Yeah, man.
Where it belongs.
Yeah.
Nice.
We're kind of like ramping up on that season. Like, I mean, I feel like South Beach is like the beginning of like all these events that like start coming up. So
right when we usually start shaking off winter, but winter never happened. So
it kind of did.
Come on.
Whatever. You never wore your postal hat.
Exactly. First time in 25 years.
That's crazy.
Wait, but winter didn't happen even less last year. I mean, winter was non-existent last year.
But at least we had a long stretch of consistently cold. This year we've had like 2 days.
Yeah, thank God we have had a long stretch of shitty weather.
Thank God. I'm just saying, come on. Climate change is not a thing. It was invented by the Chinese. I don't want to talk about it.
All right. Well, anyway. Yeah, so we'll be speaking with Joe Riggs next week, and thanks a lot, guys. Jim, Ray, Garrett, great to have you in the studio again.
Thank you, Damon. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We can't wait to see you at Exotica on Tuesday night at Slowly Surely. And that's about it for this week.
Yeah, I just want to throw a quick shout out to last week's guest. I'm sorry I wasn't here. I was in Mexico, Jess Lambert, but she left me this delicious coconut Negroni that I've been sipping on throughout
and
the show.
And
this house-made Fernet, and I got a pocket full of Fernet lollipops.
Yeah.
What a fucking lucky boy I am.
She was awesome.
I listened to it from down there. It was a great episode. I'm sad I couldn't be here.
Well,
if you like this show, tune into Heritage Radio Network to listen to thousands more shows just like it. Join us next week with Joe Riggs, and thanks again to the team from Slowly Surely.
All right. Till next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music. Save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio.
Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.